Welcome to Let's Talk Micro.
Hello, my dear audience. Welcome to another episode of Let's Talk Micro. As always, I hope you had a great week. And you can always find Let's Talk Micro on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, Goodpods, whatever you listen to podcasts, you can find Let's Talk Micro. As far as social media, I am on Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube as Let's Talk Micro, on LinkedIn as Luis Plaza, on X as Let's Talk Micro 1, and I have an email address which is letstalkmicro@outlook.com. So either via social media or via email, you can always reach out with any suggestions, any feedback, any possible podcast topics. You know, they are always welcome and appreciated. So please go ahead and subscribe to the podcast, download episodes, and if the app allows you to do so, please go ahead and leave a review. And as always, if you are looking to learn more about antibiotics, please check out www.learnantibiotics.com and the Learn Antibiotics book, available on Amazon. These resources include cheat sheets, practice tests, games, and more, and they are being used by thousands of people worldwide and may be helpful for you or your colleagues. Great resources from Dr. Timothy Gauthier, a very passionate pharmacist. And if you haven't listened to the previous episode of Let's Talk Micro, please go ahead and do so. It was the next episode of the AMR subseries. And as always in that series, Andrea Princey joins me as a co-host, and we were joined by Alyssa Walker, and the episode was about polymyxins. So you might have heard about colistin in the lab. So as always, in the spirit of the series, we break it down and we talk about things like mechanism of action, which organisms are these drugs intended for, and intrinsic resistance. We reference the CLSI M100. Then we also reference the Appendix B in the M100. All in all, it was a great episode with great information, so definitely I invite you to check it out if you haven't already. And definitely, if this is the first time that you're listening to one of the AMR series episodes, I invite you to check out the previous ones. We have some about fluoroquinolones, tetracyclines, beta-lactams. So, great content. Definitely check it out. And before I move on to today's episode, you know, I've been saying this in the past few episodes, but this week, as you're listening to this, ASM Microbe is happening in Atlanta, Georgia. So, stay tuned on social media. I have a couple of events that I'll be participating in, and I'm also looking forward to meeting you. So go ahead and download the ASM app, and if you're attending, you know, you can sign in and it will give you the schedule of the events. So on Friday, June 14th at 8:15 a.m., the Battle of the Brains, I'll be participating in that one. I will also be at the Clinical and Public Health Microbiology Meetup, and that's going to be in the CPHM Track Hub on Friday, June 14th from 4 to 4:45 p.m. Also on Sunday, June 16th, around 1:15 p.m. is a two-hour event for new agents. And I'll be talking, you know, my talk is going to be about an abstract regarding sulbactam, durlobactam. So I definitely invite you to download the app, check out the events, and if you're attending Microbe, definitely, you know, if you see me, say hi. And I have some stickers if you want one. Okay, so let's move on to today's episode. And it is about urinary tract infections. In the lab, we definitely work with urine cultures, right? And we are very familiar with the pathogens and the antimicrobials and things like that. But this episode is about how UTIs are caused, you know, what organisms are typically seen in UTIs, what are recurring UTIs, and also about treatments. So it's always good to learn what happens on the other side, you know, what the patient is going through and how it works. So in the episode, I am joined by Dr. Madeline Barron. She's a science communicator at ASM, the American Society for Microbiology, and she was a guest on the podcast before. She was in episode 74, which was about microbes in cleaning appliances and tools. So I invite you to check out that episode if you haven't already. But in the episode, Madeline, you know, she talks about all these topics regarding UTIs, like as I said, you know, what is a recurring UTI, which organisms, any treatment options. So I think it was a great episode with great content. So let's go ahead and listen to it. So those of you that work in the lab and work in microbiology and you deal with urine cultures, so you definitely, you're familiar with the pathogens and you know the organisms, you know, the biochemicals, but it's always good, you know, learning a little bit more of what happens behind the whole process behind
urinary tract infections or UTIs. So I was reading this article called Why Do Urinary Tract Infections, UTIs, Recur? That was published in the American Society for Microbiology on May 3rd. And I thought, you know, this will be a good topic to have on the podcast. So with me today, I have a guest, and she was a guest previously on the podcast, and her name is Madeline Barron. Madeline, welcome to Let's Talk Micro.
Thanks for having me back. I'm happy to be here.
My pleasure. So it has been a while since you were a guest last in the podcast. So maybe can we start with a quick introduction to the audience?
Yeah, definitely. So I am the science communication specialist at the American Society for Microbiology. And within that role, I write articles and create content for ASM.org that span a diverse range of topics. And I also host our Microbial Minutes YouTube series.
Yes, and I've seen some of that, and every now and then I see like some little videos out there.
Yeah, it's a fun thing to do. I enjoy it.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, so let's just start with some basics. You know, when do urinary tract infections occur?
Yeah, so UTIs typically occur when bacteria invade the urinary tract via the urethra and travel into the bladder, where they can cause issues there. And this introduction can happen in a variety of ways. For example, you know, wiping after using the bathroom or things like that, which can physically introduce bacteria into the urethra in that way.
Yes. And then, you know, in the article, you mentioned some organisms and you know, medical laboratory scientists are definitely familiar with this. And for a more general audience, like sometimes, you know, you're listening to this and you're wondering maybe, you know, what are some examples of organisms that are seen in UTIs?
Yeah. So there are a range of different bacteria in particular that cause UTIs. So in 80% of cases, though, uropathogenic E. coli or UPEC is the culprit behind a UTI. But other examples include, you know, Proteus mirabilis, that's a tongue twister, Klebsiella, Staphylococcus aureus, Enterococcus faecalis. So just kind of a diverse range in different contexts. But UPEC is definitely one of the paramount pathogens for this type of infection.
Yes, definitely. And that's something that we, like, you know, when we work on the urine bench and we see them a lot and when we're training and when I'm teaching students, I tell them, you know, if you're working on urine cultures, you know, you will definitely see E. coli over and over and over again. It's definitely very common. So we get familiar with, you know, from the classic morphology, nice lactose fermenter, non-mucoid to non-lactose fermenter and all the other morphology. So we definitely get very familiar with E. coli. And those other ones, yeah, definitely we do. So what is defined as a recurrent urinary tract infection?
Yeah, so, you know, when someone has a UTI, there is a 25 to 50% chance their infection will return. And with that, a UTI is considered recurring when someone has three or more infections in 1 year.
Yes, and that's something that we, when we work those cultures, we start getting familiar with names, and we see patients that they over and over, like, oh, this patient is back and, you know, they have a history. And sometimes, you know, it seems that they're very hard to get, you know, get rid of or get some sort of resolution on them. So, you know, so when I was reading the article, you mentioned a lock and key mechanism. Can you talk more about that?
Definitely. Yeah. So when we're talking about UPEC, and as we just said, we often are when we're talking about UTIs, it's really sort of this broad name for any strain of E. coli that was recovered from the urine of a patient with a symptomatic UTI. And so it is worth noting that some people do get UTIs and don't have any symptoms. But when we're thinking about UPEC, it's really this swath of different strains that can differ in various aspects of their physiology, like how many putative virulence factors they may have, or how they're expressing genes involved in motility and metabolism. And so all of those, you know, factors together influence the organism's ability to survive and cause damage within a host. And so the host has a role to play too, though. So there are a lot of genetic, behavioral, environmental factors that determine susceptibility to UPEC. And so with that in mind, scientists sort of describe this lock and key model, which essentially says that the outcome of an encounter between a specific host and a potential UPEC isolate is, you know, depends on the combination of the fitness state of the isolate, so sort of the key, matched with a particular host environment susceptibility. ability, so the lock. And so you need these things to match up in order for infection to result. And so, in other words, and this is true outside of UTIs too, right? It takes both the host and the microbe to align to result in disease.
Yes, definitely. And that's something that we have seen, and it definitely varies with the host. So anything else as far as, you know, what any other things that contribute to bacterial growth and survival?
There are a number of things that contribute to bacterial growth and survival. So, for example, some conditions like diabetes predispose to UTIs and recurrent UTIs in particular, in that people with diabetes tend to have elevated glucose concentrations in their urine. And so UPEC can actually use this as a food source, and that, you know, research shows that bacteria can exhibit enhanced growth in glucose-rich urine compared to normal urine. And so this is an example of a host situation that really facilitates bacterial survival and growth. Catheters are another key player here. These devices essentially create a scaffold for bacterial adherence and biofilm formation. And these biofilms are hardy and can persist even after antibiotic treatment, which, again, facilitating growth and survival and can prompt recurrence as well. And so recurrent UTIs have additional ties to genetics and an ability to completely empty the bladder after urination, which creates a persistent pool of urine to, again, support bacterial growth. And, you know, in addition to these other factors, scientists are also uncovering associations between the gut microbiome and recurrent UTIs, and that they think that differences in gut microbial diversity and function in those with a history of recurrent infections may alter immune responses to bacterial bladder colonization by way of what they call kind of this gut bladder axis. So that can also may have a role in influencing bacterial survival. And it's, you know, of course, the bacteria have a role to play here too. It's also worth noting that bacteria like UPEC come equipped with factors that facilitate their growth in the bladder environment. So pili to stick to host cells, or two-component systems to sense and respond to the environment. There's toxins and secretion systems, and really just the ability to use nutrients in urine, which is actually doesn't really contain many compounds that other bacteria like to eat. So again, we're looking at both the host and the microbe here to understand what's facilitating survival in the bladder.
Yeah, and when you talk about diabetes, that's something that, you know, and we see that actually that extends to other areas. And sometimes, you know, we see when we work on the bench and we see like wound cultures, for example, like patients, as they have wounds that they won't heal. And we get like a wide variety of organisms. So sometimes, you know, you get three or four Enterobacterales, and you couple that with three or four non-fermenters. So those cultures, yeah, they can get very messy. And that's something that we see day in and day out in the lab. And so when we talk about, so your pathogenic E. coli, so, right, we have mentioned that how it's able to grow and, you know, get nutrients. And so how does it cause the UTI, the infection?
Yeah, so during infection, UPEC first adheres to bladder cells and is then internalized into the cells lining the bladder wall. So it's inside these cells, the bacteria are sort of safe from host immune responses, or kind of in this little intracellular haven, and they begin to replicate. And after they've undergone this replication, they eventually emerge from the cells and infect neighboring bladder cells, so kind of just spreading in that way. And, you know, the bladder cells are ultimately trying to get rid of the bacteria. This isn't something they would like to have happen, right? So they start undergoing programmed cell death, and they start to shed. And this shedding of bladder epithelial cells, which is a normal process, really kicks into high gear. And so that's great, but what's unfortunate is that while this shedding is, you know, sloughing off these infected cells, it's also exposing underlying epithelial cells to UPEC or the, you know, bacteria in general. So the UPEC can essentially sneak into these freshly uncovered bladder cells and form what's known as quiescent intracellular reservoirs. And they can kind of just hang out in these reservoirs for a few weeks. There's, again, just sort of protected in that intracellular space. And so eventually, maybe, you know, when bladder cells are turning over, the bacteria in those reservoirs can reemerge and jumpstart new infections, which likely contributes to recurrent treatments in addition to some of the other factors that we already mentioned.
Yeah, you know, it's definitely such an interesting process that, of course, you know, the infection is not fun, but from the science point of it and learning behind what happens and how does it infect, it's always, you know, it's fascinating. It's like the same way we get excited in the lab when we see an organism that we haven't seen. And of course, you know, it means that, okay, yeah, someone has this and it's not fun, but just learning about it is very interesting. And just as you were mentioning, what you mentioned earlier about the microbiome, so definitely very fascinating. So I invite the audience to look more into it. And stay tuned. I have an episode coming up on that, but it was some interesting. And I admitted before doing the podcast and before studying my master's, I did not m know much about it. But I've been learning more, and you know, from the composition and all the things that, you know, it's attributed to the change of it, and what, you know, like from eating and things like that. It's very interesting.
Yeah, I think what's interesting about the microbiome too is we're seeing, like, this is an example, right? The effects are just so far-reaching and they're systemic. So you can have just this mass of bacteria in the gut, for example, but really it's influencing processes throughout the body. And I think disentangling those interactions is really fascinating, and it's a area that's forever growing in the field.
Definitely. So when we talk about UTIs and the lab, we're familiar with you know, as far as treatment options, we definitely know about antibiotics, and you know, that's something that we definitely do testing for. And you know, we get requests sometimes for additional ones. So let's go ahead and talk about treatment as a general. So what are some treatment options?
Yeah, so like you said, antibiotics are sort of the name of the game when it comes to UTI treatment. But antibiotic resistance in general, but in this case too, is becoming a key concern. There is an antibiotic called pivmecillinum. I hope I'm saying that right. It's quite the mouthful, but that is used in Europe to treat UTIs, and it's also expected to become available in the US in 2025. So this would actually be the first time in 2 decades the FDA has approved a new drug for UTIs. But again, there's still the concern of resistance development and the need to use this drug in a responsible manner. But that concern is also motivating the push for alternative methods of, you know, prevention or treatment for UTIs.
Yes, and you know, with antibiotics, it's always such a, when we're looking at that profile and we see, you know, normally, like, you know, and for the audience, when we think about E. coli, for example, like normally, you know, you test a panel of drugs, and then a normal E. coli strain, typically, you know, it's very susceptible, you know, with the drugs that are tested for it. And then sometimes, you know, you see those strains that are just completely resistant, and then when we talk about drugs, you know, like that, and then sometimes, you know, for like urine cultures, we do phosphomycin, and then sometimes you see that resistant too. And in general, you know, you see more drugs that are like the last line for resistant antibiotics, and then you see those resistant as well. I'm like, so yes, this antimicrobial resistance, you know, it's very serious. And I know you mentioned in the article, you know, talk about vaccines. Maybe can you expand a little bit more on that?
Yeah, absolutely. So vaccine is kind of one of those areas that is, you know, expanding in terms of how can we treat or prevent these from happening in the first place. And so, or particularly recurrent infections. And so researchers are developing several candidates to prevent recurrent UTIs, some of which target different components of UTI bacteria, such as, you know, a protein needed by UPEC to attach and invade host cells. One candidate known as Euroimmune is a pineapple flavored spray that is administered daily by mouth and contains heat inactivated UTI causing bacteria, so E. coli, Klebsiella, a few others. And it was shown in a phase three trial that among people assigned female at birth with recurrent UTIs, 58% were free of UTIs after 6 months of Euroimmune treatment, compared to 25% in the placebo group. So those are pretty promising results. And the vaccine is approved in many European countries and is available through special access programs and some others, but it has yet to be approved in the US. So we're currently in the space here where we have some options under development, but nothing really used regularly.
Yeah, one thing always seems, you know, right, that the approval process here with the, you know, with the FDA, and it takes longer than other countries, let's say. You know, and then any other treatments, as far as you know?
Yeah. So there's also you know, a branch of research that's focusing on non-antibiotic treatments for UTIs. So for example, this can include, you know, molecules that mimic proteins on the surface of host cells. And essentially these molecules bind up microbes before they infect cells. They're kind of like mimicking what a cell looks like and the microbe binds to that and doesn't infect the real cell. There's also compounds derived from diverse sources like plants. Researchers recently found a couple compounds derived from plants that disrupt host cell machinery that UPEC needs to enter bladder cells. And so if the bacteria can't enter the cells, they can't be protected from antibiotics, and they're more susceptible to those treatments. There's also interest in the possibility of using phage therapy for UTIs, so the therapeutic use of bacteria infecting viruses. And in this case, bacteria often develop resistance to phages that infect them. But when they do, they become more susceptible to antibiotics, or often become more susceptible to antibiotics. It's sort of this trade-off, right? They're like trying to resist the phage, but in the meantime, then all of a sudden they become susceptible again. So scientists are proposing that we could maybe capitalize on this trade-off to preserve the efficacy of existing treatments. So essentially coupling phage therapy to sort of weaken the bacteria with antibiotics and maybe preserving how well those work. So things are happening, and there may be a time where, you know, we are able to really prevent UTIs and keep them coming back for good. So we'll see. It's things are moving along.
Definitely very interesting. And you know, I think this whole article, it's something that, like, as I said earlier, it's, you know, it's very interesting. You know, something such, it's so common, you know, an urinary tract infection. You know, a lot of people have them in their lifetime, and just something very common. And then in the microbiology, you know, lab community, you know, we work with them, but understanding the behind them, you know, it's definitely, I think it's just, you know, it's so informative. So I definitely liked it. Is there anything else that you want to add?
I don't think so. I think we covered a lot of ground. And I will just add too, like, after I said I won't add anything, I'll say this. But yeah, you know, they are so common. And actually how this article came to be was we have some UTI content on the website that has performed super well for years. And so sort of, you know, this is indicating that people are really looking for answers to some of these questions. And so this was one of them that people were particularly searching for. And so, yeah, it was interesting to learn about and write, and I hope it's useful.
Definitely. And for the audience, you know, I'll put the link to the article in the show notes if you want to go ahead and check it out. Also, the article has attached to it, there's like an older podcast episode from the ASM that also talks about UTIs. So, you know, you go to the article, you click on the link, and it can take you to the podcast episode if you want to expand on this and get more information. You know, Madeline, you know, thank you so much. It's always, I enjoy reading your articles. You know, they're always very interesting, and I learn so much in the process. So thank you for what you do. And at the same time, you know, thank you for the opportunity for you to taking the time to be on Let's Talk Micro.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure as always.
My pleasure.
And that, my dear audience, it's the end of this episode. I hope you enjoy learning about UTIs, urinary tract infections, with Madeline Barron. As always, I enjoy sharing this information with you. Please continue bringing that passion to what you do. It's so important. You do such great work. And if you're attending ASM Micro, hey, say hi. I'm looking forward to meeting you, connecting with you. If you have any questions about the podcast, any topics, I'm always happy to meet you and talk with you. So I'm looking forward to it. This is a great event. So I hope to see you there if you're attending. And stay tuned on social media, and maybe I hope to see you attending the events. So as always, stay motivated, stay safe, and of course, continue talking micro. Until the next time. Bye.